Kutasicha is Chelik Chag Beis, Parsha Bahar Sicha Beis, a summary of the Sicha. In this week's Parsha, it talks about a Jewish slave that was sold, and then when the Jubilee year arrives, V'yotza me'imach, he shall leave from you, hu uvanavima, he and his sons along with him. So Rashi asks, it quotes the Pasuk, he and his sons with him, and explains, Rav Shimon said, if he was sold, who sold his sons? Why are we talking about his sons? So from here we learn that the master is obligated to feed the children as well. So we have to understand about this, because why does it have to say, if he was sold, who sold his sons? The issue is only, what are the sons doing here? Why are they mentioned? So why does Rashi have to introduce, if he was sold, who sold his sons? What's the difference about he? We know he was sold. And the question becomes even more pronounced, because back in Parashat Mishpatim it also talks about a Jewish slave, and over there it says that if he is married, if he is the husband of a wife, then his wife should leave along with him at the time when he leaves, when the stint is over. So there Rashi says, and his wife shall leave with him. He goes directly to the question about the wife. Who brought the wife into the picture that she should have to leave? She was never sold. It doesn't say, if he was sold, was his wife sold? It doesn't say that. It just says, his wife, what's she doing here? And of course the answer is that he has to feed her as well. But so over here, why does he feel that he has to say that introduction? If he was sold, who sold his wife? His son. In fact, the question is even greater, because in the source of this, Rashi's explanation is what Rav Shimon says in the Gemara. And over there, he says the same thing in Parshat Mishpatim, on the Pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim as well. He says, and the wife will leave with him. Rav Shimon said, if he was sold, why does his wife, who sold his wife? So in other words, Rashi chose to ignore it in Parshat Mishpatim, and in our Parsha, he chose to quote Rav Shimon directly, exactly the way he said it. So why over here does he feel he has to say the introduction, and over there in Parshat Mishpatim he doesn't? So we see that there's something fundamentally different about the way the story in Parshat Mishpatim and the story in our Parsha. We have to understand what the difference is. Another thing we have to understand, in Parshat Mishpatim Rashi says from this pasuk that his wife should leave with him, we learn that the master is obligated to feed the wife, and then he adds, and the children. Even though in that pasuk it doesn't say anything about children. So one might want to say that it's not that we learn it from that pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim, it's just that since we know, Rashi knows that we're going to learn about it now in Parshat Bahar, so he already includes it there. But if that's the case, why in our pasuk doesn't he say also that he has to feed the wife, which we know from earlier? He could have, if he wants to cross-reference, then he should do the same thing here. From this we learn that he has to feed the children as well as the wife. And for this quest, for this reason, it makes more sense to say that Rashi holds that from in Parshat Mishpatim we can also learn the fact that the sons have to be fed from the fact that the wife has to be fed. That's why he includes it there. But then the question becomes, so then why do we need a pasuk in Parshat Bahar tell us that he has to feed the children as well, if we already know it from the fact that he has to feed the wife? So we'll understand all this by first asking another question in the wording of Rashi. Rashi begins, if he became sold, in the passive, nimkar, which means he was sold. We don't know who sold him. Not somebody went ahead and sold him in the active, but in the passive, he became sold. And then concludes, who sold the children? In other words, he starts with passive. If he became sold, who went ahead and sold the children? Why does he change from passive to active? Why didn't he keep it the same? Either say, if he was sold, then how did his children become sold? Or say, if he sold himself into slavery, who sold them into slavery? Either way, but not to change the passive to active in the middle. In fact, the Gemara does keep the same structure. The Gemara says, if he was sold, were they sold? And Rashi changes it from that to say, who sold them? So we have to understand that. And the explanation is, according to Halacha, the Gemara learns that from the fact that there's a pasuk in Parsha Mishpatim that says that if a person will sell his daughter as a maidservant, from this the Gemara learns that only a girl can be sold as a maidservant, but a son cannot be sold by his father. Therefore, the Gemara is asking, his children, they can't even be sold. His sons can't even be sold. Talking about Banav. Banav mi nimkarim, can they even be sold? They can't even be sold. There's no law of selling your sons. But according to the Pshat, Rashi holds, if you look at the direct meaning of the Pasuk, the direct meaning of the Pasuk doesn't always include every halacha which is ultimately deduced from the Psukim. The simple reading of the Pasuk doesn't always express all that. So according to the basic Pshat, one could say the fact that it says if he sell his daughter doesn't mean to preclude his sons, because it's talking about a daughter there, it's talking about a girl, and there are certain laws which pertain specifically to girls, but it's possible that you could sell a son too. So al derech pshat, from the perspective of pshat, you could sell your son into slavery as well, and therefore minim karim can't mean can they even be sold. Yes, the sons could be sold, and that's why Rashi changes it, not can they be sold, but who sold them. In other words, we're not talking about the sons. Nowhere in the does it mention here that somebody sold the sons into slavery. So why is he suddenly bringing it up? Which now explains the Rashi. Now it explains also why Rashi says, if he was sold, which was the original question, why does he bring that in? Because Rashi doesn't question only, why does it say in the Pasuk, Ubon of Imay, and his sons should go free as well, which is the most important question, who brought them into the picture. But Rashi also questions, why does it say, he shall go free from you, who, he, and his sons with him. Why does it say he? Why is that word in there? In fact, Rashi does quote all three words to start this explanation. Why does he quote the word who? Because he questions that word. Why does it say who as well? It should have just said, and he shall go free from you with his sons with him. His sons with him, not he and his sons with him. So Rashi wants to make sure that we understand that this one could possibly want to interpret the pasuk this way. The Yotzam Imach is scenario number one. He shall go free from you. If he sold himself into slavery, he shall go free from you at the Jubilee year. Then there is a second scenario. Who Uvan of Imai? What happens if he sold himself and his sons? Then the sons also go free at this time. And that's what the Pasuk means. So Rashi says, no, that's not what the Pasuk is talking about. Because nowhere in the Pasuk does it say anything about his sons being sold. It says that he sold himself. It doesn't say anywhere that his sons were sold. So therefore, how did they get into the picture still comes back to as a question. So Rashi says, what this is saying is that the sons will go free even if only the father was sold into slavery. What that means is he's been feeding them all this time. Now they go back home. They're no longer part of the master's responsibility. So then why does it say who? He shall go free. Why do we need that word? Because Rashi says there's actually a novel idea which is being taught by adding the word who, because one does not necessarily have to take it for granted that the father, the slave, has to be sold either. So the Torah is saying, you have been feeding the slave and you have been feeding his sons. I'm teaching you that you must feed the slave and the sons. We'll explain later why you would think that he doesn't have to feed the father. So now he tells you, he goes free, you don't have to feed him anymore. His children go free, you don't have to feed them anymore. Now, as we said, there's a difference between the pasuk in Mishpatim or the psuk in the parsha in Mishpatim and the parsha here. The difference is, Rashi told us already that in Mishpatim it talks about where somebody was sold into slavery by the Bezdin. In this parsha, it talks about if a person will become destitute and he will sell himself into slavery. Now, there is a very big fundamental difference in terms of whether the master has to feed everybody, the family, or not. whether they were sold by the Beis Din or whether they sold them, he sold himself into slavery. What's the difference? If the Beis Din sells him, which means it's against his will. So now they took the father away from the house. There's nobody to feed the family. Where are they going to get food from? So the Beis Din has to take responsibility that they have to make arrangements with the master that he has to feed the wife. Who's going to feed her? It's the husband's responsibility to feed his wife. So the Beis Din says to the master, we're selling you the slave, but along with it comes your responsibility to sell the wife, to feed the wife. Now, since the pasuk says that he has to feed the wife, if the wife, who is an adult and could technically get a job herself and feed herself, yet the Torah says no, the Beis Din has to make arrangements, so how much more so the children? The children who are children, they don't have the ability to work and get a job. So of course the Torah insists that he should be sold. That's why Rashi includes Ubonov, because if the wife has to be sold, it has to be fed, of course the children have to be fed. On the other hand, when somebody sells himself into slavery, the Beis Din doesn't get involved in that sale. It's a thing between two people. And the master says, I'm not taking on your whole family. Me made a deal. I'm going to pay you so much and so much for 6 years of work, of service. And who's going to feed your children? I don't know. It's not my problem. And therefore, one could logically say that when a person sells himself into slavery and did not make an explicit arrangement that the family is going to be fed, then the master has no obligation to feed them. That would be what you would think. Therefore, the Torah says, no, in this case too, Banav Imai, you take on the father, you're taking on the children as well, you have to feed them as well. And that's why you can't learn it from the Parsha Mishpatim, because over there, of course, we understand that he has to feed them because it was against the will of the family. But over here, it's with their agreement, so whatever they decided, whatever they have a mind to do, or they'll become part of the poor people of the city and the community will feed them. That's why the Torah says no, but has to tell you again now that even in this case, the master has to feed the children. But it's not necessarily true that the wife has to be fed as well in the case where he sells himself, because she could get a job, let her get a job. So therefore, it's not that Rashi doesn't necessarily feel that he could say, and the wife also has to be fed in this case. In other words, there's a very big difference between the Beis Din selling him or selling himself in terms of who's included in the meal plan. But then why does it say in this pasuk who, he? In other words, now the pasuk is talking about the meal plan, who does he have to feed? So why does it have to say the slave himself will go free, in other words, is no longer fed by the master, along with his children? Obviously the slave has to be fed, so the answer is no, it's not necessarily obvious that the slave has to be fed, because the master could say, I paid you so much and so much for 6 years of work, take your food and buy food from the money that I gave you. Why do I have to pay for your food? Or at least if I'm going to have to feed you so that you can work, I'll give you basic water and bread and so on. So the Torah says no, who? You have to feed the slave himself as well as the children. The Torah is giving you a new novel idea that you have to feed the slave himself. You're obligated to feed him a regular meal plan. Now, as regards to the wife in the case where he sold himself, so there are two ways that you can look at it, at least from the perspective of Pshuto Shel Mikra. Either that he's not obligated to feed the wife, because just because the children who have no other option, where are they going to get their food from? So he has to feed them, but the wife, let her get a job and she can feed herself. Or maybe it's true that he does have to feed the wife, but can you learn it? You're not learning it from the fact that the sons have to be fed, because over there's no logical reason the master gets nothing from them, he gets no benefit from them. The Torah decided that he has to feed them. But the wife has to be fed, not because just because the Torah decided. By the wife, there is actually a rational reason why he should feed her. Because if he wants the wife to live with her husband in the home, and this way provide the comforts of marriage, the husband is happy, he's got his wife there, he's got his family there, so the wife actually provides a service to the master. That's why he has to feed her. But it's not learning it from the fact that you have to feed the children. So it's not learned from here at all. It's just a fact that the Torah said you have to feed her. Or rather, it's logical that you have to feed her because you're getting a benefit from her. But a gifted child can still ask the following question. What is the reason that the master has to feed the children? He gets nothing from them. Why does he have to take on the whole family just because he bought a slave? So Rashi gives an allusion to the explanation to this by naming the person that said it. It was Rab Shimon that said it, Rab Shimon ben Yochai that said it. As we know, that Rashi gives the names only when it adds some explanation, at least for the gifted child. What does Rav Shbi say? He says in Masechta Baba Basra, anyone that doesn't leave a son to inherit him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is filled, Hashem is filled with anger at him. Now it seems from the way he puts it, to a son to inherit him, that this is not about, why didn't he have children? Well, he violated the mitzvah of having children. That's not what's at stake here. There's something about the Hashem is happy when a person leaves his heritage for his children. It passes on. That makes Hashem happy. If that's lacking, so then Hashem is angry. In other words, that this is emphasizing that a father and a son pass on to each other. They're really one entity. They pass on. It's a family entity which the father passes on to the son. In other words, or more specifically, one could say the father and the son are really one and the same. They're one extension of each other. That's what Rashi says, that if you don't leave a son to inherit you, in other words, to take over, to step into your place, so then, you're missing this, the family heritage that passes on. That's important. So therefore, that explains why you have to feed the children, because if you have the father as a slave and you're feeding him, the children are part of the same entity. It's one unit. You have to feed the children just like you feed the father. That explains that. At least it gives an underlying reason why the Torah says that you have to feed the children as well. And that's why the pasuk concludes, and he shall go free from you, he and his sons with him, and he shall return to the heritage of his father. And Rashi explains that what does the heritage mean? To the honor of his father. In other words, the whole thing is seen as, we've got a family unit. There's a grandfather, his son sold himself into slavery, and his sons have to be fed by the master. Why? Because it's all one entity. You have to feed the children if you have the father. Eventually the father has to return to the family unit back, or to the family honor back, when he goes free from slavery, he goes back to his father. It's all talking about a family unit. That's what it's about. Another point that the Rebbe makes, you can learn from this Rashi, when it talks about the idea of being sold into slavery, is an analogy for the Golus in general. So the Pasuk tells us, when you go free, meaning to say, when a person is in, when the Yidden are in Golus, he and his children have to go free, which means to say that the Eibishter also is in, he is the Eibishter, his Banav, the children, is the Yidden. So Hashem is also in slavery. He's also enslaved when he sends the Yidden into Golus. So Rav Shimon comes along and he says, there's something more important here. If Hashem goes into Golus, that's his business. He has the ability to be able to be in Golus and stand above it, not be affected by it. But if he's able to be sold, how could you sell the children, the Yidden, into slavery when the Yidden end up in slavery? They're affected by it. We see that there's a disconnect between Hashem, or at least an apparent, and it seems that there's a disconnect between Hashem and the Yidden. How could you allow that? If you want to go into Gaul, it's fine, but what about the Yidden? So Rashi says, this is only about the feeding. In other words, the material needs of the Jewish people. The whole Golus only affects the food, the material needs of the Yidden. As the Friedrich Rebbe said, that only the body was sold into, went into Golus, but the Neshama always remains beyond Golus. So, Hu Ubanav Imai means you have to feed them, that it's all about the feeding. The feeding the needs, the material needs, Hashem decreed have to go through the nations of the world rather than directly from Hashem. But the neshama stands above it completely. And as we know also in regards to the Beis HaMikdash, that the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was only in the stones and the wood, the physical building, but the spiritual aspect of the Beis HaMikdash remains until today, was never destroyed. So one might think that at least for the material needs, it's now the nations of the world that have control of what the Yidden should or shouldn't get. So Rashbi says no. Rabbi Chaya, from here we see that Rabbi is Chaya b'mezayin is bon of the Hashem. Rabbi means the master. Hashem obligates himself to feed his children, which means he decrees that it should go through them, but they have no say in whether it should go or not. It's going to go whether they want it or not. Hashem is obligated to feed them, and therefore he gives them, the Yidden, all their material needs. They are merely like a hammer, a tool in the hands of the workmen, and you never thank the hammer, you never pay any attention to the tool. And so also, they are merely a tool through whom it goes, but Hashem gives the Yidden everything that they need in Golus as well, children, health, and parnasa, their material needs in abundance. Mm-hmm.